You know, I went through Air Force pilot training, and, you know, I'm not the smartest guy. It was tough. We lost about one-third of my class, either quit or washed out. But I didn't have anybody hating me because of the color of my skin. I can't imagine what that experience was. Let's talk about the training process a little bit. Who wants to talk about that? You started off in the steerman. You want to talk? Okay.
Okay.
Go ahead.
It's interesting because I felt I had a really a good experience down in Tuskegee. Our primary pilots were all Afro-Americans, and they were tough. And they wouldn't hesitate to wash you out. And you either cut it or you were gone. And primary sets the basis of what you're going to do throughout your training. From there, we would go to the Tuskegee Army Airfield, where we had basic and advanced. There, we had the white military pilots as our instructors. I was very fortunate. I had what I thought was just a real great guy and basic. We got along just great. I thought I learned a lot. I passed, at least. I went up into advance. I thought I had a great instructor. As a matter of fact, one of the instructors there was from Minneapolis, Minnesota, and he had gone to the University of Minnesota. And I can recall coming down to one of the very early briefings, and he says, anybody from Minneapolis? Yeah, I'm from Minneapolis, whatnot. And he says, you know the University of Minnesota fight song? I said, I've heard it a few times. Well, jump on that table, dummy, and sing it. So here I was, you know how it goes. And but he and I really developed a good relationship. And I can recall in about the third or fourth week of our training, he called me off to the side and he said, Harold, 10 pilots are going to be washed out. And I'll never forget that as long as I live. He said, you come in here with your shoes shine, no creases in your flight suit. Don't give anybody a reason to say, let's go for a check ride. Because I'll tell you now, you will flunk it. And we lost 10 of our classmates in advance with no more than about 5 to 6 weeks to go, and they would have graduated. So those were some of the things that was a fact of life, but I was fortunate. I had a guy who treated me perfectly, and even though I had some skills, I thought I had great flying skills, but that didn't matter. It was very arbitrary who stayed and who didn't stay. So that was my experience in Tuskegee.
Thank you for that. You know, you went from the steer person, to be politically correct, to the T-6. Brian, you fly the T-6 now, and the T-6 is one of the greatest trainers in history because, man, if you could fly that thing well, a Mustang or a Corsair was a piece of cake. Let's talk about flying the T-6.
I started flying the T-6 about a year and a half ago, and it's been the scariest flying of my life. I've been flying tricycle gear, and the tail dragger is a different experience. Above the ground, as long as we're away from the ground, T-6 is a joy to fly. It's actually a very nimble airplane. But coming down close to the ground, that's where it gets scary. It's a massive airplane compared to the general aviation aircraft we fly. I fly a Blanca Super Viking, a Lance, but it's 500 pounds, and it's a massive airplane. So you have to keep all of that in mind. There's just you add a lot more complexity to what you have to think about and do in the aircraft when flying it. And then I'm learning from my friend here, Brad Lang, that flying the P-51 is easier than the T-6. And I relaxed after that, because that's my goal, is to fly the P-51 one day. So I'm learning now, and they actually call the T-6 the pilot maker. If you can master that airplane, and I haven't done it yet, then you'll be a good pilot. You could fly anything the Army Air Corps made at that time.
Brian, would you talk some more about the history of the Tuskegee Airmen? What happened to them after the war?
After the war, you had several things that happened to the airmen, and I'll pick Harry Stewart, who should have been here today, except his wife fell ill. Harry Stewart was a member of the Top Gun team, and he went to an airline to ask for a job. And two airlines turned him down, just flatly said no. One airline explained why they could not hire him, and they said, imagine what the passengers would think if a black man would walk down the aisle into the cockpit. That was some of what happened to the airmen who tried to get into the airlines. They were just blocked. Other airmen continued their educational pursuits, became PhDs in math, and taught school, high school, college. Others went into business ventures, became millionaires. Colonel Davis himself was in the FAA and actually was very high in the FAA. The security measures that he put in place stayed until 9/11. And 9/11, everything changed. But up until then, all the security measures in the airports were implemented by General Davis at the time. We had one airman who became General, Daniel Chappie James, 4-star. He was the head of SAC, Strategic Air Command. He sat next to the President of the United States and heard his name. I'm sorry? Air Defense Command. Thank you, Colonel McGee. So the airmen did many things. The group that was in the 477th, who actually protested the order that they could not go into the officers' club, that group didn't get very high in the armed services because of that stain on their record. They protested the segregation, and that stain caused them never to rise above colonel. And that, I think, was a shame.
I think this would be the time for me to tell my Chappie James story. He was our guest speaker when I graduated and got my wings in the Air Force. And I was his escort officer. He came into Webb Air Force Base at Big Spring, Texas, and I went out to greet him. He came in a black F-4 Phantom, and it had the Black Panther painted on the front of it. And he was a big man. He was probably 6'6 or 6'7 and close to 300 pounds. He was huge. And when I crawled up on the ladder of that big Phantom, I'd never seen a Phantom up close. And he stood up in the seat. I said, my God. He stuck his hand out, and it was about 3 times as big as mine. And I said, Colonel James, I'm Lieutenant Boland. I'm your escort officer. And he said, nice to meet you, son. You could call me Chappie. And I said, he was a bird colonel at the time. I said, sir, I can't do that. But he gave the most patriotic speech that night. I don't know if my brother's here or not, but he heard it. And it was about racism and how he had overcome that. And he said, I have this sign on my desk at Eglin Air Force Base. And I'm quoting here, folks. I'm not going to use the N-word, but I'm going to quote exactly what that sign said. Chappie told me, I have this sign on my desk at Eglin, and it says, you had better believe I am the biggest N-word on this base. And that's exactly what it said.
I heard recently from someone who served with Chappie in Libya, where Gaddafi was from, and they were both colonels at the time. Chappie James called Gaddafi out with a six-shooter or his .45 on his hip and said, we're not leaving this base. Gaddafi was trying to get the United States to leave the country, and Chappie said, no, we're not leaving, and called him out.
Chappie flew in Vietnam with Robin Olds, and they called themselves Black Man and Robin. That's true. And they shot down a bunch of MiGs together. As a matter of fact, Christina Olds is here right over there in that building, and she's autographing Robin's books. But I asked Robin one time, I said, did you actually shoot down 5 MiGs in Vietnam? He didn't want to shoot down 5 because if he became an ace, they would send him home. And he wanted to stay there with his men. So Chappie and Robin gave some of their kills to other people in their flight because they didn't want to go home. That's a true story. Let's talk about some other great Tuskegee Airmen, because I noticed that all the guys I have met, and I have met a bunch of Tuskegee Airmen over the years, they all have been successful in life. They're federal judges, they're doctors, they are all successful. Can you talk about some more famous?
Sure.
Yeah.
You wanna?
Well, one thing, and I think I would put it this way, because I see a lot of young folks here, and we're not in school, but I would say it's four P's. Number one, perceive. And those, dream your dreams, find your talents. Number two, prepare. Get the education and make the most of it. Come out of school, be able to read, write, and speak well, plus have that talent development. The third one, perform. Let excellence be the goal in everything that you do. Everything. And finally, persevere. Don't let obstacles be an excuse for not achieving.
And one who exemplified that an airman who exemplified that was Major General Lucius Theus. He entered the Army Air Corps as a private and worked his way up to a two-star general, and he was put in charge of all of the Air Force money. You know, they say finances, but he was in charge of all the finances for all of the United States Air Force, from a private all the way up, and he exemplified the four P's that Colonel McGee just talked about.
You know, there are people in this country that think you should sit on your butt and not work and let government pay for everything, and I think the Tuskegee Airmen have just proved what the proper way is.
I agree. In fact, I've been involved with the group for about 35 years, and that has prompted me to excel and achieve. Sometimes people can't understand how I do it, and it's because I watch them in their later years tell of their experiences and actually lead the way for me, mentor and advise me on how to conduct my life.